Welcome to Zavvy's Video Rewind, a podcast from Zavvy, the home of pop culture. I'm your host, Emily Murray, and together we'll be digging into our video archives, discussing a wide range of cult classics, all of which have recently received, or will be receiving, a new release on disc. Each week I'll be joined by a guest to discuss a movie and the importance of film restoration. And for this episode, we'll be diving into none other than the 1993 romantic crime drama, True Romance, directed by Tony Scott and written by Quentin Tarantino. The story follows an ex-call girl and her husband as they go on a run for the mafia after stealing a shipment of drugs from her former pimp, and stars a great ensemble cast which includes Christian Slater, Patricia Arquette, Gary Oldman, James Gandolfini, Brad Pitt, Christopher Walken, and so many more brilliant actors. The film recently received a new release from our friends at Arrow Video, which includes a new 4K release, Blu-ray, and Zavvy exclusive 4K deluxe steelbook, all of which feature newly commissioned artwork and both a director's cut and a theatrical cut of the movie. We are joined by a guest you would definitely say you're so cool to, as film journalist Cameron Frew joins me to discuss this cult favourite. How's it going, Cameron? I thought you might like your introduction.
I did. I'm smiling with that intro. Yeah, I'm very excited to talk about True Romance.
You have been begging me to watch True Romance, I think, for a long time.
I have. So I consider this only fair that I'm on here to discuss this.
Yeah. Because I hadn't seen it before until this new release, and I thought it'd be a good one for the podcast, because obviously the podcast is all about cult classics getting new releases. It actually surprised me that I hadn't seen it, because I would say I'm quite a big Tarantino fan. I love Tarantino. I love his style. I love his screenplays. I don't know if like some part of my brain was like, oh, he didn't direct this. I don't, you know, I won't touch that. But I was wrong, basically.
Well, I mean,
very wrong.
The podcast can just end, because that's all I'm doing. You're wrong.
Yeah, because I watched it for the first time. I watched a new Arrow release, which is gorgeous. And I should say that we're talking about the theatrical cut, because there's two different cuts. I will go back and watch the director's cut, but we watched a theatrical cut for the podcast. And I didn't really know what to expect, because I didn't know too much about it. I was like, True Romance. I was like, well, it sounds romantic, but it's Tarantino. It's going to be a bit, you know, edgy, pulpy, violent, which obviously it is. But I think what struck me about it was just how kind of cute it is. It's just sweet. It's just nice.
It's very, very romantic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's why it works, to be honest. It's like you just said at the beginning, you were initially maybe a little bit put off by the fact that Quentin Tarantino didn't direct it. But all of the sweetness of it is Tony Scott. The man was a master, and no one really made movies like Tony Scott, and True Romance is a perfect illustration of that.
Yeah, I suppose my first question for you is, because I know this is like one of your favourite films, so I wanted to know what your first impression was of it when you first saw it, if you remember when you first watched it, because I said this was my first time and I was delighted with it, to be honest.
Yeah, I remember exactly when I first watched True Romance. It was back in 2015, I was working at CEX at the time, and during my regular shifts of stacking DVDs, I would always see True Romance in the T section of the DVD section, and I was just always curious about it. Like, I was vaguely aware of it. I knew that Tarantino had written it. I don't want to pretend and say I knew that Tony Scott had directed it, because I wasn't quite as into films back then, even as much as I am now, to a different extent. And I just took the plunge one day. It was like 50p on DVD. I was like, you know, I'm just going to buy this. I'm just going to see what it's like.
Yeah.
And instantly, one of my favourite movies. My favourite Tarantino movie, to be honest, if we're including movies that he's just written and hasn't directed. I would take True Romance over any movie he's directed. It's one of my favourite movies. It had a huge impact on me. It's a movie that I've endeavoured to get so many people to watch, including yourself, because anyone who watches it, I've yet to find anyone who doesn't really love True Romance, or at the very least enjoys it. I know there will be reasons why some people may take against it, but that's one of the reasons it's a cult classic. It's not glossy. Mm. It's inappropriate and violent, and the dialogue is proper old style Tarantino without maybe quite as much nuance as there is now in some of his dialogue, like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and all of those are just it's great for that reason. It's a right relic of the early 90s.
Yeah. Because one of the things I was going to ask you as well is because I looked at sort of how well did the box office, because I think I found for a lot of the films we're talking about on the podcast, I think Last Action Hero is the best example. This film flopped at the box office. It didn't make any money. I think it earned $12 million against a budget of $12.5 million. So it did make a loss, like not much of a loss, but it still made a loss. Which is puzzling to me because watching it in like today's world, I'm like, that's a great movie. It's, as you say, I can't really see why anyone wouldn't enjoy it. Like, it's got all the elements. It's fun, it's cute, it's got a bit of comic book violence, it's romantic. It's just a wonderful film to watch. So I'm puzzled why nobody went to see, well, obviously people did go to see it, but why it didn't do very well at the box office. Because I think also it was released after Reservoir Dogs. So Reservoir Dogs was a bit of a hit, and then this came out, and it's Tony Scott, Tarantino, the cast is amazing. Like, why did it not perform? So I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
You know, it's one of those things, I think I can only chalk it up to people being the worst and something really inexplicable. Like, The Shawshank Redemption tanked at the box office.
I did not know that.
And only became a success on VHS and later DVD releases. And this is just a very similar story. True Romance, clearly at the time, in theatres didn't really capture people's attention. For reasons I don't know how I would be able to explain, but it's definitely lived on as Arrow Video's release clearly shows.
Yeah.
People are interested in owning it at home, and the fact that it's got such a bespoke release just like completely speaks to being a cult classic in that regard. It's a shame that it didn't do well theatrically, but in a weird way I'm kind of glad that it didn't, because it's got this sort of allure to it that anything, when I first watched it and mentioned it to people that I was going to watch it, you got like the wide-eyed reaction of someone who knows they're about to see a really good movie for the first time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I like the fact that it has that status. Obviously not great for the studio that it didn't make enough money on it, but
I mean, everyone did well. Like, it's not like it ended Tarantino's career or Scott's career or anyone's career. They all went to do other stuff, so. But yeah, I suppose you're right. It sort of gives it like a hidden gem kind of status.
Yeah.
It's like, I imagine there's a lot of people like me who would say they're Tarantino fans and love Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs, Once Upon a Time Hollywood, like all the big Tarantino movies, but probably haven't seen True Romance.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, yeah. No, I would absolutely agree with that. I showed my flatmate True Romance last year. He'd never seen it, and he'd never really heard of it, despite saying he would be a Tarantino fan. And that's been the case with most, if not all, people I've shown True Romance to over the past 6 years.
Yeah, but as you said earlier, the sort of trick about True Romance is obviously it's very Tarantino, but it's the way that Tony Scott sort of softens the edges. Like, as you said, all the romantic, all the softness, all the sort of there's like a sort of magical, I think, sort of aspect to True Romance, with, I suppose, the instant romance and this weird journey, and the fact that you both survived this like crazy journey as well. And obviously you got Elvis in the bathrooms with Clarence. Like, there's a sort of magical cutesy softness to it, and that's all Tony Scott edging out Tarantino's kind of cynicism. So I think that's sort of really what makes this film special, is as what you said earlier, is the way that Tony Scott sort of brings to life this story in a kind of different way to we've seen other Tarantino stories been brought to life on screen.
It's exactly that. I think, as I say, especially because it's an early Tarantino work, I think Once Upon a Time in Hollywood shows that he is capable of being a bit sweeter with his stuff.
Yeah.
But True Romance is a different level of cutesy, and I don't mean that in a bad way. Like, that's why the movie works, that it's so overtly, overly schmaltzy at times. It's a huge part of its charm. Alabama and Clarence falling in love instantly. I remember the first time I watched it thinking, like, how there's just no way. But it is just meant to be a complete pulp fantasy in that regard. And yeah, Elvis, played by Val Kilmer, is just bizarre. But yo, I always remember Elvis from True Romance, and it's emotional as well. Like, that it lends itself to that hugely. Like, the ending of True Romance for me makes my eyes well up, and I'm pretty sure my girlfriend Lily even shed a couple of tears at the end of True Romance, first time she watched it, because you just get swept up in it. It feels like a classic Hollywood ending, but with blood and death and cocaine and all that stuff thrown in.
Yeah, It's a Tarantino Scott ending. But it's interesting you bring up the ending, because obviously that wasn't Tarantino's original ending. He wanted Clarence to die in the final shootout, and then sort of Anna Barrow would just be, I suppose, left by herself. So
horrendous. That would be horrendous.
I know. So it's interesting that that's how Tarantino wrote it. So it's a perfect example of what we said about how Tarantino was like, right, yeah, Clarence is going to die, because that's kind of realistic. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm surprised Clarence lasted that long, to be honest. But as you said, it's because it is a romantic fantasy from the early 90s. It's so pulpy and magical. Like, it makes sense for the way that the story has been told, that they have to live together on a beach with a child. And it is very, it's kind of like, not sickening, but like, what's the word? Like, sickly sweet.
Yeah.
But in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah, it never overindulges. Like, it's very sure of itself, and I've never felt put off by how sweet it is. It's nice to have candy, like, and that's ultimately what it is. But like I said, with all this horrible stuff thrown into it, which is why it's like such a good 18 rated movie. It felt like, I'm glad I watched it at the age I did, because I as I've spoken to you before, I've watched lots of films when I was younger that I was ultimately too young to see, but I've appreciated because of that reason. I don't think I would have got as much out of this when I was really young compared to when I was, well, in 2014, I was 17. 2015, I was 17, 18. And it was just perfect. It's a perfect, perfect movie. I still think it's a bit of a perfect movie for me personally, but yeah.
It is interesting though how, I suppose, this sort of, yeah, how Tony Scott does sort of bring these edges to this story, because it is very Tarantino at times. Like, I always think that's, you can tell when it's more Tarantino than Scott. For example, the Sicilian scene with Christopher Walken.
Yes.
That's when Tarantino has a sort of little moment to shine, I suppose, because it does, I think that helps it stop from being too sweet as well, because you do have this sweet romance, but then there's sort of these weird, violent aspects and sort of where the dialogue really gets a bit cut in. I like the Sicilian scene. I'd heard about that scene before, because I think that's one of the standouts, and I was like, I get why I've heard of this before.
It's the best scene in the movie. It's just, and you know what? It's a shame to say it's the best scene in the movie, because I don't mean to take away from all the praise we've just heaped on Tony Scott for making it his own, but that's just my favourite Tarantino dialogue. It's outrageous and really dramatic. Christopher Walken's Vincent Cocotte saying he's the Antichrist. I can't imagine how anyone writes that, and that's what the best dialogue should be in Tarantino's case. Dialogue, I'm just like, how did you come up with that? Like, who writes that in a day? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's how I feel with the tipping scene in Reservoir Dogs. Reservoir Dogs is my favourite Tarantino. And it's just like, I don't understand how someone could write like such dialogue, because it just works so beautifully.
Yeah.
And it is, even though we said, like, obviously it is Tony Scott's film, like, it is very Tarantino in terms of all the sort of quips, pop culture references, obviously. He's all about the references, the quirky tone, the big shootout at the end, which feels very Tarantino. All these, like, guns everywhere. Like, I think, like, three different groups come in for the shootout. It's all these tropes that we associate with Tarantino, but it's just a bit softer, and I think that's maybe what makes it a bit more mass appeal, because I know that even I love Tarantino, I know that Tarantino isn't everyone's cup of tea.
Yeah, that's the thing. Some of Tarantino, like Reservoir Dogs, is a great example, considering they came out in such close proximity of one another. Reservoir Dogs is a brutal film, even now.
Yeah.
Whilst it's got darkly funny moments, and some of it has a lighter energy to it with the music and stuff like that, it's true romance I would sooner show to someone the Reservoir Dogs, just because I think it's just got a better chance of someone really enjoying it, because it is distinctly lighter and sweeter and all the things we've basically said. Yeah, it's
interesting, because I think I read online that Tarantino obviously had these scripts. He had Reservoir Dogs and True Romance, and he pitched both to Tony Scott, and he could only pick one.
Yep.
And Tony Scott picked True Romance. And it's like, sometimes I'm like, what if in a different world it would have been the other way around?
Yeah, I'm so glad that I just can't imagine a Tony Scott Reservoir Dogs. But I suppose you can't, because you just can't imagine that. But True Romance just feels so more in Tony Scott's wheelhouse, like with later work that he did, like Man on Fire and Domino and stuff like that. and even Deja Vu, I think True Romance is very much more for Tony Scott, and I feel very blessed that he took that script instead of the other one.
Yeah. I mean, he wanted both, but Tarantino was like, nah, no. You can have one. You can have one of my my presents. I suppose Tarantino used the money that he made from selling True Romance to make Reservoir Dogs. So I suppose we have Tony Scott to thank for
exactly
Reservoir Dogs as well.
True Romance is the root of Tarantino's success for me, as much as Reservoir Dogs was his immediate launch pad critically. You don't have Reservoir Dogs without True Romance, so True Romance is responsible for it all.
Yeah, it's interesting something you said earlier about when you first watched it and you saw the romance and how they instantly fall in love. You were a bit like, because I was at first a bit like, well, this doesn't feel real. But it's interesting how I had that thought for like 2 seconds in my mind, and then you find yourself easily swept up in their love story. I think you're right. I think as soon as you realize this is a fantasy, obviously it's not a fantasy on the screen, but it's a fantasy sort of tale. You're like, right, I'll just go with it. And I think a lot of it has to do with the chemistry between Patricia Arquette and Christian Slater, who are excellent. Mm-hmm. There's a moment where Christian Slater is like, he seems all sweet and nice and shy, and he goes into the bathroom and he talks to Elvis about wanting to kill the pimp. I was like, oh, you're just a bit unhinged, mate. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
But I buy it.
Yeah. I think it only took me literally like seconds to believe their relationship after Alabama says she's in love with Clarence.
Yeah.
Like as they're walking down the steps after getting married, I was just like, okay, I'm with it. I'm with it now. But like you say, there are those moments where he talks to Elvis and I'm like, this guy is a lunatic. Like he is fully crazy. And then obviously he goes to murder
Drexel's. Yeah. Yeah. The cast is amazing. I think I wasn't really aware of who's in it. I knew Christian Slater was in it because I watched Heathers for the first time this year as well, which is another great movie. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of like aware of him. And but I didn't know, obviously, like Val Kilmer. Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman just shows up. I'm like, that's not Gary Oldman. Wait, is that Gary Oldman?
Yeah. I think, again, that's something else that anyone that I've showed it to is always like, is that Gary Oldman? Yeah, the cast is off the chain in True Romance. Even like tiniest roles, like Brad Pitt as the yes. stoner on the couch, James Gandolfini, a young James Gandolfini, Samuel L. Jackson in a tiny appearance. Yeah, his beginnings of working.
Samuel Jackson is credited as Big Don, and that's a great character name.
Yeah.
If I was in a film, I'd want to be Big Don.
And Chris Penn and Tom Sizemore as the cops, Dennis Hopper, Christopher Walken, and Michael Rapaport, who makes a brief appearance in Friends, but as
yes, Phoebe's boyfriend, her police boyfriend,
and more. Like it's just ridiculous. Anytime I watch it, I'm just like, oh, there's that guy. Oh, there's that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's just amazing.
I think it's because they made Reservoir Dogs when everyone's like, we all want to be in this movie. And it is such a good script. Like, everyone's having fun. But it's not one of those films where it seems everyone's having fun. And the more fun they have, the less fun I'm having. I'm having as much fun as they are having on screen. It's like, I read that Gary Oldman loved it so much. And he was like, right, I'm bringing my mum to set. His like 70-year-old mum was just there watching him die whilst he's in these like mad dreadlocks. Because it's just like, yeah, it's just, you kind of get the idea it's kind of lighthearted and just like everyone's just having a bit of a laugh on set. James Gandolfini for me, because I'm currently obsessed with The Sopranos. It was really nice seeing a young him, obviously before he's like Tony Soprano. And he has quite the scene as well.
He is terrifying. He is terrifying in True Romance. The whole speech about how he just kills people now to see how the expression on their faces change is horrible. But then you have the scene with him and Brad Pitt, which is just a perfect illustration of everything we've already been saying about how the movie's still light and funny. The face off between the door. It's a mix of tones in this movie that I can't really think off the top of my head that have been replicated quite the same. And the cast, as you say, the cast clearly relish every moment of it.
Yeah, like Brad Pitt, you can just tell. I think he improvised most of his lines anyways. It gave me very much Brad Pitt and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood vibes.
You condescend me, man. I'll kill you, man.
Exactly. He's just having a laugh, like, clearly. But as you say, it's such a strange mix of tones, because what other film will you have where it's got this massive, violent comic book shootout and it cuts to this sort of very dreamy scene on the beach at the end with this family? Like, it jumps, but it never feels like it's clashing at all.
No, it never loses that balance for me, not at one moment in the movie. It's hard. I mean, that's the thing, it's easy to say, I'm just being biased. That's what talking about a movie is, and I think this movie's flawless. I could watch this movie on repeat if I wanted to. And that's for all of the reasons we've just said and more, such as I'm sure you will reference the music. The music is a huge thing for me in this movie.
Yeah, the music was weird because, like, the theme comes in, and I knew the theme. I hadn't seen the film, and I knew the theme. So the theme must have been used in, like, other things, and I know it from there. But it's got this sort of weird... Obviously, we should say it's Hans Zimmer. I mean, I'm sure everyone knows it's Hans Zimmer because he's a legend. Yeah, it's Hans Zimmer, but it's sort of got this... It's very different for Zimmer. It's very, like, plinky, plonky, simplified. But it works. It's kind of, like, hypnotic in a way, like, how simple it is. It sort of just gets in your mind. But again, it sort of goes with a sort of... These characters are quite understated and stripped back as a kind of tone for the film as well. So it sort of works for this cute, simple romance.
Yeah, and it's dreamy as well. Like, I think it always lends itself well to the sort of fairy tale, pulp fairy tale feeling of the whole movie. The theme itself, I think probably directly, because people have always said about it, and I'm sure Hans took direct inspiration from Badlands by Terrence Malick. The theme from that is... The xylophone theme from that goes back to Badlands. And then beyond the score itself, just the songs that are used in it. It opens on Charlie Sexton's Graceland, the song when they're about to go for some pie at the diner. It's John Waits in Dreams. All of those, it's like tiny moments, tiny, tiny bursts of music throughout it, coupled with the score. Yet when the movie ends, I'm always going hunting out the playlist on Spotify to re-listen. And I don't own the score on vinyl yet, which is criminal considering the vinyls I own already. So that's going to be my next purchase, I think, once the box set arrives.
Yeah, a nice accompanying piece. But you're right with the soundtrack. It's not like massive needle drops. Because sometimes in needle drops, it can be a bit too much. It's subtle. But again, that's what we've sort of been saying throughout this whole podcast about how sort of subtle and understated this movie is. Like, everything just works. And I think the song choices, as well as Hans Zimmer's score, it just sort of plays, like, smoothly over the top.
Yeah, there's no big needle drop like Kill Bill's battle without honour or humanity. There's nothing... Like in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Bring a Little Lovin' when Brad Pitt's driving along the freeway. That sort of musical usage is not implemented in True Romance. It far more relies on that recurring motif from Hans Zimmer. And that, again, that's just why it works. It sustains this constant magic throughout the movie using that score. And I think if the needle drops had been made any more explicit... Or like jukeboxy, it would take you out of the movie, I suppose.
Yeah, it takes you out of that world and that sort of fantasy that they have created. You sort of you need to believe the love and believe the story. You have to really absorb yourself into it, and everything from the score. We haven't even spoken about the visuals yet, and it's sort of glossy, washed out sort of LA. Like, it just looks stunning as well, and it's all part of creating this atmosphere to totally absorb you into this fantasy world.
And everywhere it goes, it does that. Like, it opens on a fairly kind of bleak winter Detroit, or well, a snowy looking Detroit, with that same theme. Moves into a relatively grotty trailer, and that's when it just cuts away most of the music. When you go to sunny LA, it's like exactly like you said, the washed out look of LA. I think it's a lot of people have said it really represents Los Angeles very well. I mean, as someone who's never been, I can only go by
I've never been.
but True Romance is something I think about when I think of Los Angeles. That and I don't know, Grand Theft Auto and other movies, but True Romance makes me want to go to LA. Despite, again, all the horrible stuff that happened to True Romance while they're there, the shootouts and all the drugs.
All the drugs, yeah. But it's like, yeah, I want to like go and those. Like, one of my favorite scenes is when they go to have the conversation on the roller coaster.
Yeah,
which is
ridiculous. But that's just Tony Scott going into pure Top Gun mode when he's filming that, because it's just filmed like he would film an aerial sequence in Top Gun. And the fact that he does that in this movie is another reason why it's just so clearly a Tony Scott movie more than a Tarantino one. Because you have that, you have the wild, bloody shootouts, and the really quick cuts, which if you've seen when you see Man on Fire, you can see where the links between the ways in the film are, and then you have the sweeter stuff as well.
Yeah, but it's just like you just have these sort of use of locations like the motel as well, which is just excellent. As you say, sort of LA, the use of colour throughout. Like, I love the neon lit signs of the bar, and then also in this sort of video store. It's what you said earlier, like it's a relic of the early 90s. It feels so early 90s. Yeah. They're like electric blue cinematography in the steamy sex scenes. It's just, it's yes. So much of that era.
Yes, the sex scene is another testament to Christian Slater and Patricia Arquette's chemistry, who were reportedly dating during the time of the movie. And
oh, that's interesting. I didn't know.
And I think the sex scene illustrates that, or at least indicates that somewhat, because that is a steamy, steamy sex scene. And again, it's the Top Gun lighting from when Tom Cruise and Kelly McGillis get it on. So another Tony Scott trademark.
It's just like, it's so glossy. It's so early 90s, so off his era. And also, it just works for this film because, as we said, it's got this fantastical, magical element. Just, I believe it. And you have to have, like, all early 90s films need a weird sort of steamy sex scene like that. It's a tick box.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't watch this for the first time with my mum and dad.
Maybe this is why my dad didn't show it to me. I did have a question for you, actually, because one of the things I found interesting about it was when looking at what Tony Scott changed from Tarantino's script. Obviously, we have spoke about the ending, but also the structure in general. Tarantino's story was originally non-linear, so it like started at the bar and then went to them being on the run with flashbacks to sort of how they met, etc. And Scott was like, nah, let's make it straightforward and linear. And I'm like, why did Tarantino write it in that way? Because for me, that overcomplicates it and adds in a mystery there that you don't need. It works so much better to me as linear.
The man's obsessed with non-linear narratives. Like, he was just about to do Pulp Fiction, so it doesn't surprise me to hear that they originally envisioned one of his first scripts as a non-linear narrative, and that's probably where I suppose Pulp Fiction might come from, his desire to do that with True Romance and Reservoir Dogs. But no, True Romance, in my opinion, would just not work that way. I think it operates so much more smoothly as an A to B love story with lots of chaos in between. I wouldn't like to jump to, if this started at the end, or like, I suppose a non-linear version of True Romance starts with them in the car as they're driving away with Clarence's eye blown to bits. And then it would like cut back. No, it's wrong. It's just wrong. I would hate that if it was non-linear.
Yeah, I think the thing with it being a linear is it allows you to have that journey of them meeting, that spark, and them falling in love. And if you don't have that journey, I don't think it'd work, because you sort of be thrown into the chaos and it'd be a bit like trying to find your feet. You don't need a mystery of what's going on here at all.
Yeah, I don't need any indication of where it's going. The reason the movie works so well in the first time you watch it is because every 5 minutes is like whiplash with things, the developments that happen, whether it's them getting together almost instantly or Clarence killing a pimp. If the movie tracked back to those moments through a non-linear narrative, it just wouldn't have the same punch at all.
Yeah. Yeah, it goes from 0 to 100 very quickly. But, like, then it goes back to zero and it goes straight up to 100 again. It's just, yeah, but as you say, like we sort of said earlier with the tone, it never clashes at all. It's kind of remarkable that it works, you know.
Yeah.
The more I think about it. But it does work. What's your favourite scene, Ben? Because there's a lot of good ones.
You know, it's a really hard thing because there's ones that just kind of jump out to me instantly. Like for example, I love any scene with Saul Rubinek's movie producer who did Coming Home in a Body Bag and the war movie in the
movie.
Who is designed as a portrayal of Joel Silver. Like, all his scenes are so funny. But they aren't what I would probably rewatch. It probably is the Sicilian. And well, actually, the whole start of that, as soon as Dennis Hopper's character comes back into his trailer and Christopher Walken's Vincent Cuddy starts speaking to him, that's what I go to if I'm on YouTube and I want to watch a clip from True Romance. I'll just watch that through and then probably tweet about it. So, yeah, that's mine. What's yours?
I like the roller coaster scene I mentioned earlier. It's just bizarre, but I also believe it is, like, if I was going to have a try and sell drugs to someone, I'd probably try and go, like, crazy and do it on a roller coaster. It just makes sense for these kind of unhinged characters to have this conversation on the middle of a roller coaster. And as you said, it just feels very, very Tony Scott and kind of a bit wild. I like it. I loved this film. And it's interesting that, you know, as we sort of said earlier, it's a box office flop and it sort of then found an audience later on. And obviously the podcast is all about film restoration, and obviously we're celebrating the new release from Arrow, which I love the new release from Arrow. It looks fantastic, the new 4K restoration, but the artwork that they've commissioned for the box set is stunning.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. I mean, I did message you as soon as it was announced and I was like, what? Straight away, the biggest box set they've got, I was instant purchase, didn't even need to consider it.
No, but why do you think this film did find an audience later on? I suppose it's continuing to do so. Like, I watched it for the first time. I'm sure with the release of this box set, others will watch it for the first time. Do you think it's because people kind of know more now about Tony Scott and Quentin Tarantino? They're like, oh, actually, let's go back and watch this 90s film. Because I don't think it's like ahead of its time or anything. Like, as we said, it does feel like a relic of the 90s. So is it maybe a bit of nostalgia there too?
Yeah, I think it's a huge combination of factors, to be honest. Like back then, it found its audience because it's violent and it's sweary and it's got dialogue that no one had ever really heard before because no one was writing like Tarantino really at that time. And then later, as decades passed, maybe people became more familiar with Tony Scott or were fans of Tony Scott that wanted to discover his past works. And I think most of all, it's definitely Tarantino's fame growing and people looking at his past catalogue of films and just being like, okay, I've never heard of that, I'll check that out. And then the cycle of people like me sharing it with people incessantly begins, and it just keeps going and going and going. It's just reasons like that. It's a perfect cult video movie. Like, it is what I think of when I think of a cult movie, because I can see why it didn't necessarily maybe have mass appeal when it first came out. And then as soon as it hit home video, it's spread like wildfire and then just continued to do so.
Yeah, it seems quite fitting for it to find success on home video, considering, I suppose, Tarantino used to work at a video rental store, and it's a film made by a film fan with all these pop culture references. Like, Clarence works at a kind of comic book, mm-hmm. pop culture video store. It's what I said, like, we did one on Last Action Hero as well, which obviously has this sort of video rental store and that. Like, it seems like that these films are kind of built for the VHS market. It's not like a massive budget. Like, I'd love to see it in a cinema, but I don't feel like I need to see it in a cinema. Like, it works just as well on my TV screen. Like, it just feels built for watching at home.
I've never seen it in cinema. I've never been fortunate enough. It was showing at Prince Charles in London a couple of months ago, but obviously I just couldn't make that journey. But no, I don't think it does necessarily need the cinema. It's a perfect movie to watch home. That's how I've always watched it, and I've never felt a yearning to be like, oh, I wish I could see this in the cinema. Obviously that would be lovely, because seeing anything in the cinema is lovely.
Yeah.
But I think especially with a new restoration of it, one, obviously I can't wait to dive in and watch it, because it's a movie I love. But I hope that it encourages even more people at some point to watch the film. Because I know when it briefly arrived on Netflix last year, and that's when I used my powers of persuasion to get lots of people to watch it. And now I'll have a brand new glitzy box set that I'll be like, oh, well, if you've never seen this, just I'll lend you it. I'll lend you it. You can watch it and then you can go buy it yourself.
Yeah. And that, you know, this podcast is all about the importance of these re-releases, because like this one's quite special because it's obviously got a huge new restoration in 4K and they've commissioned all this gorgeous artwork and it comes with all sort of art cards and booklets and extra features. Like, I really always pull out the stops for releases like this because I know that there's obviously an audience out there for True Romance, and it is a kind of audience who will collect these like special editions, like us too.
like us. I cannot resist it, but I don't feel like I'm being cheapened out by it. Like, it's not, it doesn't feel like a cheap release, and that was the first thing I thought when I saw the listing on Zavvi, as I thought, oh, they've really put in the effort. Like, they've got multiple different kinds of artwork, a few different releases to choose from, which is always a good sign. And like you say, in my experience, Arrow have never not pulled out the stops. Like, I have the Robocop release, which is like one of my favourite physical media purchases in my collection. And I have no doubt that True Romance is going to earn that status in my special box of collector's Blu-rays.
Oh, your special box. We'll go into that later for my last question of the podcast. But why do you think it's important that we have re-releases like this? As we sort of said earlier, it is about finding the audience. And I know you said obviously briefly around Netflix, but nothing lasts forever on a streaming service either. And the quality you get from these new releases, it's so important. So do you think that is it? It's that it's just the quality as well as the fact that it can find new audiences?
Anything to reaffirm physical media as a means of watching movies and any entertainment is really important to me personally, because I love physical media. I love the stability of physical media, even watching stuff on streaming. If you have any problems with your internet, it can affect the streaming quality of a film.
We all have problems with internet. It's just, the internet cannot be trusted.
Exactly. Whereas if you are holding that Blu-ray in your hands and you put it into your respective player, whether it's a PlayStation, Xbox, or a player itself, it is steady all the way. And then when you have a restoration like Arrow have done with True Romance, it's even better, because you're getting something that you can't really get anywhere else apart from with them, and it feels like an occasion. I appreciate not everyone invests in box sets anymore, but I really wish they would, because they put in so much effort to these movies that people love. And True Romance is a film that maybe someone who doesn't invest in physical media anymore will say that they adore, and they should take the time to look at it, and if they can, invest in it, because physical media, not that I think physical media is going to die out anytime soon, I'm not like a doomsday person in that sort of regard, it's regretfully nowhere near as popular as it once was, and Arrow releases are doing a huge part to keep people coming back in with fancy, stunning artwork, and bringing back classics, importantly, like diving in, like really listening to what people want. Because True Romance is one that I've even tweeted about wanting an Arrow release like last year, and I know they've like they listened to people on Robocop.
But they delivered.
And they delivered, and they caught. That's what I like. It feels like that now, that physical media companies are really listening to what people want, that are buying physical media, and they're producing the goods, and that's just something to be celebrated, I think.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head as well with it being an event. It's a landmark. It's not just like, oh, it's just, let's just shove it out again on disc. The amount of effort and love that they put, like, it's the love that they put into it. You can tell that everyone who's contributed to this release, like, whether it's someone's written a new essay for the collector's edition, or the people, like, the people at Arrow who obviously listened to fans and then bought this release, like, it just feels like it's made with love, and I think there's something quite special about it. And it is an event, like, I can't wait to sort of read all the new essays and watch the behind the scenes speeches, and maybe that's because I'm a bit nerdy, but
we love all that stuff. That's what it's there for. It's a treasure trove of stuff to dive into beyond the movie, and that is another huge benefit of these physical media releases. They are more than a movie. They are books almost in their side, little mini books. Not endless, but a huge amount of special features, deleted scenes, commentary. I just can't imagine not being buzzed about that for a movie that I love.
Yeah, I remember growing up and being fascinated with behind the scenes. Like, I think I must have watched my favourite film, The Dark Knight, and I must have watched a behind the scenes feature on a Dark Knight DVD of the truck flip, mm-hmm. and how Chris Cobble did the truck flip, probably more times than I might have even seen the film, because mm-hmm. to me it's like the magic of movie making. And I don't think on some releases you get as good of behind the scenes features. Like, I kind of miss it, but obviously on a re-release like this, like, they really deliver. And True Romance is an interesting story behind it, as we said earlier, how Tarantino sort of developed the script and then sold it to Tony Scott, and the sort of evolution of how it came to the screen. It's an interesting sort of historical kind of artifact as well, in a sense.
Yeah, it completely is. I think it's a gift for a film like True Romance to have a story that it does, because that, if you tell someone about True Romance and you're trying to convince them to watch it, those are the details you share with them. You don't share, in my experience, I don't share what the story of True Romance is. I tell them that it's a Tarantino script that was sold to Tony Scott with the Top Gun, and then enlightenment, all that, and then that always makes people go, oh wow, yeah, let's watch this then, that sounds interesting. And a physical media release is just that, that's interesting feeling expanded hugely.
Yeah. So we're on to my last question, which is my favourite, because it is all about how people organise their DVD shelves, because I'm kind of low-key mm-hmm. obsessed with it. And it always comes up on Twitter, like, once a month, and people argue. And you've already said you got a special box for collector's editions, so...
I do.
Is that how you... Do you separate by label, or, like, do you have, like, DVDs in alphabetical order? I obviously do mine in alphabetical order. Or, and then have, like, your collector's edition separate? Just explain the thinking.
Right now, I don't have... I would ideally have shelves to put them all on. I do not have the space for that at the moment. So they are kept in boxes underneath my bed. But the boxes themselves, I do have one special box, which is all the Steelbooks, collector's editions, and 4K Ultra HD ones, because they're more expensive than the rest. And I'll keep them all in their box. They aren't alphabetized in there, but they are piled with Steelbooks to the top, and the sturdier boxes generally at the bottom, yeah. because the steel can get damaged. And the overlays with the information in the back can be easily ripped. And then the rest of my Blu-rays are alphabetized in boxes as much as possible. When I move to my new flat and have the room, hopefully, to alphabetize all of my collector's edition Blu-rays, that will be my dream come true. I want to get the magnetic knife strips and put my steelbooks on it.
Oh,
on the wall.
Yeah.
That's my dream. We'll see how my girlfriend feels about that, but that's what I would like to do.
You gotta have, like, the best looking steelbooks, because some of the artwork in steelbooks, I mean, we spoke about the artwork for True Romance, it is a work of art.
Yeah, I want those up and up for people to see when they come in and they're like, oh, I'm gonna watch a movie. Yeah, look at what I have. they can go see all that, these incredible looking Blu-rays that don't just look like bog standard DVD casing and artwork. Like, True Romance is something I think if you give it to anyone, they would actually have a good look at it and they would analyze it, because, like, oh, what's this looks fancy, and it's because it is. And
yeah,
I hope people get as much out of it, or at least a portion of what I'm going to get out of it.
I hope so too. And I think also, talking about the artwork, it's what used to draw me in, like, back at the video rental stores, like, you know, Blockbuster and stuff, you'd see stunning artwork in a film, and that I'd be like, oh, I want to know more about that, rather than just a standard poster. And I think with True Romance, they've really, like, brought into that. They're like, look at this gorgeous artwork off Alabama and Christian Slayton. Alabama, we didn't talk about Alabama's wardrobe, stunning wardrobe in True Romance, but the use of color for, yes, the wardrobe and stuff is insane, and it just pops out in the artwork. You see the artwork, you're like, I want to know more about that movie.
Yeah, everyone's outfits in it are very distinctive. Clarence's Hawaiian shirt, I really want, but I've not been able to find a decent replica anywhere of it. But yeah, Alabama's outfit, sunglasses, the print like skirt she wears, I believe. Or,
yeah.
The outfits in it just couple up with the whole distinct feeling of like the early 90s to me.
Yeah, yeah. And it's something that the artwork, I think, really picks up on for this new release.
Yeah, absolutely. Bursting with colour all over it. The more standard Blu-ray, I believe is it the Steelbook design, that just features Clarence in Alabama, feels very much like Badlands, which is like clearly a big compliment to liken it to that, which it clearly is. It stems from that kind of world of movie of two young lovers on the run, and it reminded me of that instantly, whereas the more deluxe box set has Clarence in Alabama, has Vincent Cacciotti, it has everyone in it, and it's got almost set against a sunset, and it's just got this, even the cover looks dreamy.
It's that dreamy, glossy LA.
And that's just perfect, speaks to the movie.
Yeah, yeah, they've really nailed it. And I loved this film. I had such a good time. Obviously, it's just a good film. Yes.
I'm so relieved when you said you liked the movie. I was dreading talking to you about it in case you hated it, because you would have been the first person I know to not enjoy True Romance. So
maybe the first person.
That's
the
biggest
world.
Selling point. That's the biggest selling point we can probably say for this movie, that anyone I know that's ever watched it has said, "Oh, that was a great movie." So buy it. Like, go and watch this movie.
Yeah, well, thanks for joining us to talk about True Romance. I'm sure obviously you had a good time, you love talking about True Romance.
Yes, you don't even need to thank me. I will thank you for having me on to talk about it.
Thank you, Cameron. And if people want to follow you on social media, see more of your work, where can they do that?
You can find me on Twitter and pretty much any other social media at FrewFilm, FrewFilm.
Yeah, and that's where Cameron shares all of his film opinions. Mostly good. Some I disagree with.
You know what? I'm always a positive guy. You just may not know my positivity, and I can handle.
Yes, but Cameron shares all his work on there, so go give him a follow. And once again, thank you for joining us. I had a great time talking about True Romance.
Thank you.
And we'd love to hear our listeners' thoughts on both the film and the podcast, so please share them with us on our social media pages. Just use the hashtag Video Rewind. On Twitter, we are at Zavi. On Facebook, we are Zavi Online, and over on Instagram, you can find us at Zavi UK. We also upload our podcast to YouTube in video form, so you want to check that out. Our channel is at Zavi. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on a platform of your choice so you never miss an episode, and don't forget to give us a rating or review too. And if there's a film you'd like us to discuss, just let us know on social media, once again using the podcast hashtag Video Rewind. Thanks for listening. This was Zavi's Video Rewind, and I'll see you in the next one.